Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. All right, so you want to chat this morning? No? No, you're tired.
I'm tired, yeah.
Yeah, all right. So we'll just get started. From James, he says, love the show. Wondering what program has the icon that looks like a Swiss Army knife. I've seen it on a couple videos on Pluralsight.com. It has sparked my interest. This is your...
This is my product Swiss... studio.
Yeah, so...
It's our bug database, essentially.
Okay.
Well, it is our front end to our bug database. Yeah, it's just an internal tool.
Yeah.
I believe at one point Product Studio might have been released as a external product. I can't.
Well, if so,
remember.
That would explain why I see it on a video on Pluralsight.
That's entirely possible. You know, we've gone through multiple bug databases over the decades.
And it's pinned to your bar there, so I assume you use it all the time.
Oh, I'm constantly using it. When I'm not doing the show, it's just running.
Cool. Okay. All right, from Pauline, I have a Windows 8 64-bit system running on SSD with a storage pool consisting of two 750-gig hard drives. Configured as a two-way mirror, and in the pool I have defined two storage spaces. The pool drives no longer spin down when there's no disk activity. In power management, I have it set to 20 minutes for drive to turn off, but they don't spin down anymore. Got an update later. It said further to my email earlier about storage pool hard drives not spinning down after 20 minutes. While I was writing my email to you, I dropped the power control panel power turn off hard drive setting from 20 minutes to 15 minutes and then went for a beer or two. When I came back, the drives were spun down, not like the couple of hot bricks they were previously. That's all I changed, honestly.
So
storage pools should spin down, right?
Storage pools do spin down. What she may not have noticed was, you know, the actual activity. Even if it's just for, you know, one single hit, this drive won't spin down.
Yeah.
So it's not something that you'll necessarily notice. And by lowering that time threshold from 20 minutes to 15 minutes, you're saying, no, you know, I want it to spin down sooner. So if something happened... you know, at the 17-minute mark in that 20 minutes, so it would never get to spin down.
Yeah.
So it would just continue on like that, depending on what kind of periodic activity is happening on the system.
Would the fact that you're mirroring two storage drives like that, would that do anything? Like it's maybe copying a bit back and forth or something that would keep
it alive for a little longer? It's entirely possible, yes. Just, you know, as part of the mirroring operation, that might take, you know, an extra period of time. And, you know, after 15 minutes... it's you're saying no, I want it to spin down, and it's not actually able to do what it's doing.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that, and if you still have problems, let us know.
But storage spaces do spin down rotational drives.
Yeah. Okay. From Eddie, I notice that every time I open Outlook, it says it's not the default mail program. I've finally gone to the default program section. Was amazed to find the only program showing there is Chrome browser. What can I do to fix it? And can the issue be related?
It's entirely possible you installed something that took over the default mail handler. You can do it this way, the Win key X to go to Control Panel. And you have the default programs. You can set your default programs. Here's where you're probably looking for what's available. I don't actually have Outlook installed on this particular machine,
mm-hmm.
But if it's not there, you can also go down here to your SPAD and take a look what is set for custom here. You can choose a configuration and say, you know, Microsoft Windows. You can say non-Microsoft, see what's available there. You can reset it for Microsoft Windows.
Yeah.
There's also an option within Outlook. If you go to your main options is under File Options to re-register your mail client, and Outlook has this option, so you can force it to register.
Okay. All right, next question from Max. I'm looking to buy a new laptop, and I'd like to get something that has a Haswell processor in it. What ones would you suggest? So Haswell's kind of new, right?
Haswell is new. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, and so tell us a little bit about Haswell. What makes it an attractive processor?
Intel really stepped up their game to make something that is super battery efficient, super power efficient. It is basically the I believe they call it the TikTok cycle for how they develop chips. This is their tick cycle with Haswell.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about, you know, getting the ultra portables, you know, what they had with their 4-hour battery life.
Yeah.
Getting them, you know, up to the 8 and 10 hour battery life, but still giving them the power of the i5s and i7s.
Hmm.
You know, not just the Atoms that they added the 8 and 10 hour battery life. So
is it a strong processor? Does it have the processing power you need to like render videos and stuff? The battery won't last as long.
Well, I mean, you can if you're taking a Haswell i7 flat out video rendering, it should last longer than the i7 Ivy Bridge, for example.
Okay. So being a new processor like that, there's not a lot of machines out there. I only knew of one.
Alienware.
Alienware. Alienware is like, you really got to be dedicated to this machine to carry it around. It's a big boxy.
It is, right.
Device. So, but I mean, if you're going out and playing games or you're rendering video like we tend to do on the road,
mm-hmm.
It's a good choice. So I'd say Alienware. And what was yours?
I like the HP Envy.
Yeah.
But again, the Haswells are coming in lots of different OEM.
Mm-hmm.
Lenovo is going to have them. I believe they're releasing in the next month. So, you know, just check them out to what you're actually looking for.
Yeah.
The great thing about Haswell is they've also stepped up their game with their on-chip graphics.
Yeah.
So you're really rocking a really, really good package in terms of battery life. Which I like.
Yeah.
My number one concern for machines is always battery life.
Yeah.
I'm in situations where you just can't plug in, or you just don't want to carry around that power brick all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is my biggest complaint.
Yeah. So I used an HP Envy 17 for the longest time. I'm still using it a little bit in my office. But I would have said that. I didn't know that they were shipping with Haswell yet. So that would have been my first choice. All right, I like the Envy. All right, next question from Robert. I'm thinking about, he has a lot of questions here, so I'm going to take them one at a time with you. I'm thinking about reinstalling Windows 8 on a i7 laptop and install Windows 8 in Hyper-V as a virtual, and lock down the physical OS to only boot from the virtual. I'm looking for a way to get a virus or other problems so I can quickly blow it away and then be back up and running. First question, are there any drawbacks to this approach?
There's one big drawback to that approach, which is sleep.
Yeah.
You lose sleep in Hyper-V.
Okay.
So as a laptop, it may or may not be a big deal to you. So if you're shutting down the machine, you got to hibernate your VM, and then you could hibernate hyperboot the actual machine. So depending on, what the characteristics of the machine are, you could be back up and running relatively quickly.
Okay, next question. Are there any incompatibilities?
It'd be difficult to really understand what he means by incompatibilities. Like, software-wise, everything should just work.
So there shouldn't be any problems.
There shouldn't be any problems, no.
Caveat emptor.
There are certainly some software out there that does not like to be run within a Hyper-V environment. There's not a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you really shouldn't have any difficulties. Hardware-wise, you might have some issues, but again, you're not talking about add-in cards here. So USB will pass through no problem, which is generally your biggest complaint.
Yeah.
On a laptop, there's really not much for expansion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next question. Do I need another license for Windows 8?
You do.
Okay. And is it safer?
What's your definition of safer,
That's
right?
That's what I was going to ask you.
Because
you wrote yes.
Yeah, so it is safer in the sense that if something goes wrong with your VM, right, it's easy to rebuild.
Yeah.
You have a higher level of control over the VM with your Hyper-V.
Yeah.
Right? It's, you know, some people consider it ring minus one,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the 5-ring system, 3 rings of which are actually used. But it's, I consider it to be safer if you're super paranoid, you know, you have that extra layer of security. You know, if you're booting up, you have to boot your physical OS, and then you have to boot into your virtual OS, which you can have different layers of security on if you wanted to. Viruses, if you're exclusively in your VM, they're pretty much not going to affect your main physical OS.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next question. He says, also, I have a lot of apps. If I install apps in another virtual, can I blow away and reinstall Windows 8 virtual and still access the apps or on the app virtual? Or do I need to synchronize the registry and or other files before reinstalling? I'm trying to simplify installing all my apps that take longer than installing Windows 8. Is there a way to detach the apps from the OS?
Okay, so that was a really complex question, and it seems like you're actually trying to do a little bit too much, and actually we'll just simplify the problem entirely.
Okay.
The great thing about VMs is they have this great ability called differencing disks. Differencing disks allow you to basically do stuff, and you can either choose or not choose to commit those changes. They are written to disk, so it's not like, you know, you turn off your VM and they're suddenly gone.
Yeah.
You can do that if you wanted to. But you can choose how to commit changes to your VM, is basically what I'm getting at. What you can do with a differencing disk is if you set up your physical OS, and then you install your virtual OS, and you install your applications, you can then create a differencing disk after that point. And that's where you can start, you know, playing around with stuff. You can obviously install additional software if you wanted to. Your data, I mean, I'd stick my data onto a different virtual hard disk entirely, you know, so you can detach it. And if you want to copy it off to another VM and attach it, that would be fine. But your differencing disk would basically say, if something goes wrong, you can just roll it back. And then you'll get back to the exact same point you were after you installed all your applications, which is really, I think, what you're looking for here. And there's really no way to install your apps in one VM and use them in a different VM because mm-hmm. of the registry, right?
Yeah.
You can't just necessarily overlay things on top that way.
Yeah.
Depending on your configuration, you could, right? A lot of data centers do something similar about attaching and detaching virtual disks to machines, but unless you're an IT admin or you're extremely proficient in Hyper-V VMs, I would not necessarily attempt that. I'd go simpler.
Yeah, okay, all right. All right, this is a part of the show where we call it Andre's personal tech support line. So Andre sent us a ton of questions here, so we're going to go through these. I have new issues in Windows 8 and IE10. I'm unable to view the help with Perfview. After some tries, I found out that it is caused because of the name of my Windows account. I use my live ID in Windows 8 used as a first name as local account name. And because of the E with the mark over it in the IE, fails to open this file when I click on
the accent grave.
Okay. of Perfview. When I create a local account with the account name Andre without
the accent grave,
It works fine and I can view the help. I debug this down to this call, and he's got a URL here.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is just the vestiges of ANSI encoded files, or our code only, some parts of our code still only have ANSI equivalents. We haven't used Unicode just due to a lot of legacy compat issues, blah, blah, blah. I could go into enormous amount of detail of how much pain this has caused over the years, but it's unfortunately it's a bug and it's not fixed yet.
Okay.
You know, there's just not a lot we can do about it. It's a legacy component that has been painful in small pockets, but have never been painful enough to actually overhaul it without incurring the compat cost.
Absolutely. Okay. All right, next from Andre, will Microsoft ever increase this ugly overlay icon limit in Windows Explorer? When you only install Tortoise SVN, a file sync tool, the limit is hit and some icons are not shown. This is a frustrating UX issue.
So icon overlays, generally speaking, are a perf hit. So we've actually discouraged the use of overlays entirely. So we're just trying to move away from them.
Okay. Next from Andre, in Windows 8, you see sometimes this command line, see Windows System 32 winlogon exe dash special section, quote, logon UI.exe, unquote, /flags:0x0.
What does it mean?
What is this? I think it has something to do with fast start hybrid boot. Can you explain it a little bit?
The special session flag is for hybrid boot that got introduced in Windows 8.
Okay. Next from Andre, I have a new question about Windows 8. In Vista 7, when I start scheduled tasks, they are started by taskeng.exe, which is started by a task scheduler surface. In Windows 8, the tasks are started by services.exe. Process Explorer shows this in the parent-child tree view. Why has this changed? Is there any advantage to doing this?
It's not necessarily that it's changed. This feature actually got introduced in Windows 7. It's called the Unified Background Process Manager, UBPM, Scheduling Engine. It's a way of having more trigger-based services. So as opposed to having a service that is always started and long-lived, we have the ability to start the service and do what it needs to do and then shut down. That's the second part to it, is not just, you know, having services start based on a trigger, but also stop based on a trigger.
Yeah.
So we just have things that aren't running as frequently or for as long. And basically the UBPM has grown. So from Win 7, we had the task scheduler service as a client. And that's just now grown to other services of that is now UBPM aware. So you can take a look at this TechNet article or TechNet blog, ask the performance team. Unified Background Process Manager, Bing it, search it.
Okay,
whatever,
I'll link to it in the show
notes. You can read the nitty-gritty details of the performance enhancements that started with Win 7 is now gone forward into Win 8 in the future.
Cool. Okay. From Mike, a few of us in an IRC channel have debated back and forth with regard to Superfetch on SSDs. We know the official word is that Windows will disable Superfetch, Prefetch, and Defrag on SSDs both under Windows 7 and Windows 8. However, common sense would seem to tell me that Superfetch might even Prefetch might offer some support of benefit in an SSD system. After all, RAM latency is still much faster in SSD SATA latency. Would there be a way to get more in-depth analysis of how Superfetch impacts SSD writes and why there's not at least some sort of benefit to turning it on?
Got to remember, the actual point of Superfetch was not necessarily for the writes, it's for the reads.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're starting up your machine, when you're running your programs, the whole point of Superfetch was so that on a rotational drive, if files are scattered across the disk, that it's those random reads, seeks, that are your performance impact. So on SSDs, since there's nothing spinning, random versus sequential makes no difference whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it's actually really not a benefit. It would be imperceptible, really.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it's just using up resources on your machine.
Okay.
That's why we don't turn on Superfetch or Prefetch or Defrag, for that matter, on SSDs,
because it
doesn't matter.
Okay. All right, pick of the week time. Time for the pick of the week. And today, it is Project Spark. And so we're linking to this really favorable Verge article where the author here, Paul Miller, seems to love Project Spark. I didn't even really know about this. I saw it at E3, but I had the sound turned down, so I wasn't really watching. Went back and watched a video. It looks really interesting. It's like a mixture of like Minecraft and Populous and a lot of different types of games put together. Kind of an extension of Kodu because you're making your own game.
It's a game within a game. You get to make a game within a game.
Exactly. So uses Kinect, and we'll also link to the IGN article or video, actually, and you can watch the demo of this at E3. It was really interesting. They use Kinect to use their voice to change terrains and to build bridges and do all kinds of different things. Looks really interesting. They said in the Verge article that you could make a lot of different types of games, like first-person shooters. But when they said tower defense, that's when I was all on board. I was like, wow, a tower defense engine. All right, I'm in.
That'd be pretty cool. So, and the nice thing about it is that it's actually using various hardware, like smart glass. So, if you have a tablet or your phone, you're the artist, right? So they demo some things in the video that are, not quite drawing per se, but you're able to fine tune elements to actually truly make it your own.
They were crafting landscape using smart glass. So he's using his finger to make ditches like he would on Populous or to make mountains and stuff like that. Looks very cool. Mm-hmm. I think one of the coolest things about this is it works for a lot of different systems. So it'll be on Xbox One,
360,
and Windows.
Yep.
So lots of different options there. So check this out, watch a video, and send us an email. Let us know what you think. So that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can email us at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave comments in the show notes. We like the email so we can go back and forth. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.